Hi, this is Jackie Rom, and welcome to my weekly podcast, The Life of a Crime Novelist.
Good afternoon, or evening, or morning, and welcome to The Life of a Crime Novelist. And this is episode 9. Today I have a very special guest. My guest is my dad. So my dad is quite an interesting character. He'll be along soon. We're going to have a chat with him. He was a magistrate, and a juvenile magistrate. So he has lots of stories. So we're going to find out a little bit about the type of young people that came up against him. I find this absolutely fascinating. When you write about crime, it's really interesting to look or to find out the mind behind the criminal. So, you know, did they start young? What happened to them to be able to create an all-rounded character? All my characters, I create a backstory. So finding out about young criminals really helps me put together a well-rounded story. So it's over to David Etherton and the Justice of the Peace.
Hello, Dad.
Hello, Jackie, my favourite daughter.
That's because you've only got one, and I've heard that for many, many years.
Don't tell everybody, that's a secret.
Anyway, I've told everybody what you used to do. You used to be a magistrate.
I was a magistrate for 30 years.
And did you choose to go into the juvenile courts?
Yes, yes.
What made you choose that?
Much more interesting. In the adult court, you just deal with television licences and speeding, whereas in the juvenile court, much more interesting. You try to help those people rather than sentence them.
Let me just tell my listeners that you have a cuckoo clock that's going off. Okay, so it won't go off now for another half an hour or an hour?
Well, in 30 seconds, my train goes round the track for a few minutes. It will go in a minute, but it's not very loud.
Okay, let's carry on then. So so what age group were you looking did come in front of you?
From 16 onwards. You get younger.
You can be
charged with an offence from 10 years old up.
Oh, that's my question. So
but
what
happens? We wouldn't really have anybody in court probably under 16.
Okay, so hold on a minute. Let me just go back. What happens to the children that are under 10 then?
Nothing.
Really?
No, the police would speak to their parents, but nothing would happen. Nothing at all.
So what happens with the children between 10 and 16 that are naughty?
No, we can deal with those. But why the under 10s get into trouble is probably because they're carrying drugs or a knife for somebody much older, knowing they can't be charged.
Oh, interesting. Yes. And the 10 to 16-year-olds, you still get those coming?
No, I dealt 10 to 18 altogether, 10 to 18 in the juvenile court.
But you didn't get many between 10 and 16?
No, not really, no. They're usually dealt with in some other way by caution.
Oh, right. So once they get to 16, what kind of... can you remember any cases that really stand out to you?
We used to get a lot of shoplifting.
With the shoplifting, was it often that they were repeat offenders?
Yes.
And what could you do?
I remember we had one girl who was about 15 or 16. She'd been caught in Harrods for stealing. And she says, next time you won't catch me, as she went out the court. Yeah.
Really? Yeah. Are they a bit blasé when they come? Because if I went to court, I'd be scared. But
They come with their parents. They have to come with their parents. They have to come with an adult. They usually come with their mother. And the mother says it wasn't her, wasn't him. The mother always defends the child.
Really?
Yes, defends the child. Couldn't be my child. No way.
Because their child is perfect.
Yes, yes. They can see no wrong. And of course, that's the first big mistake of a parent.
Yeah.
Wrong.
Well, they can't change it then, can they, if they always defend them? And do you remember any really interesting stories that came up in front of you?
Well, I've been retired now for nearly 20 years. Let me just check. Maybe I'll tell you about being a magistrate.
But, go on. Yeah, please do.
You know, the court service is always after magistrates. But the most important thing the public has to know is that we are volunteers. We don't get paid. Most people think we get paid, but we don't get paid.
How do you become one in the first place? How does that happen?
You can put your name forward.
What happened to you?
No. The local political party put me forward as a magistrate because I was working for a political party and they said, why don't you put your name forward? So they put my name forward. And then it was, when I decided, a really, really long process before you get accepted. References from everybody, several meetings and discussions with you by groups of people. It's a very long process, it was. But I think now they're very short of magistrates and they need magistrates.
And did you do training, ongoing training, while you were...
Yes, on the job training. But when I became a chairman, I had to go away for a residential course, like a 5 days residential course to be a chairman.
And what, as a chairman, what does that mean? What, do you have special duties?
Well, you make the final decisions. When you leave the court to discuss what's going to happen with your two colleagues, you have to put all the facts to them and make sure they know what they're doing.
And is it just the three of you, or do you have a legal person with you as well?
Yes, we do. We have a secretary there who's independent and is a lawyer, and she or he will advise us on the law.
Were you ever frustrated that you couldn't do anything more?
Yes. But we can only sentence youngsters to 6 months in a form of prison. It's not really in the form of prison. If you want to send them more than 6 months, you can send them to the Crown Court. Another important fact the public don't know, that over 95% of all criminal cases come to a magistrate first, even murders, rape, arson, all come in front of a magistrate before they go in front of a Crown Court.
I didn't know that. That's fascinating.
Yes.
And
can I say again, we don't get paid.
Yeah, that was obviously important.
We don't mind that. We're quite happy because we're volunteers, but I think the public ought to know that we don't get paid.
And how often would you sit on the bench?
In the youth court, 2 whole days a month. I think in the adult court you sit half days, but in the youth court we had to sit at least 2. If they were short, you might sit 3 days in a month. And you sit quite locally to where you are.
And if somebody comes up again in front of you that you know, do you have to recuse yourself?
Yes, absolutely. Yes, you couldn't sit. You couldn't sit. If you recognised anybody, recognised the parents or the child. That's why quite a lot of magistrates are in education, either teachers or head teachers, and they often have to, you know, say, we know that child and they must retire.
And did you ever have that happen to you?
No. No, the areas where I was, I didn't know any of the people there, no, never.
And I want to know, like, juicy stories, apart from shoplifting.
Well, I can tell you one. On appeals, when sometimes these people appeal, and therefore it must go higher in front of a judge. And the judge has to have 2 juvenile magistrates sitting with him. That's the rules. So that the appeal comes up in front of a judge and 2 juvenile magistrates. And I remember one of these judges telling me that they were dealing with this sex matter, and it was very complicated. So he had to take all the papers home with him to look through all the papers. And there was lots and lots of papers, and he'd spread them all over his living room floor, these papers, to read them very carefully, forgetting that his wife had invited the neighbours in for dinner. And they came in and found him on his hands and knees reading these sexual papers all over the dining room floor. Very, very embarrassing for this judge.
So how did you know that story? Did he tell the story?
Yes.
Yeah, that is funny.
Yes, yes.
And
it was good because when we sat with them at lunchtime, we retired to the lunch. They used to tell us all these stories, but of course it's 20 years ago now. But yes.
And you were sitting for how long? How many years? 25?
I was about 40 when I started, and you have to retire at 70.
So you did 30 years. Had times change, or the actual crimes change? Was there more shoplifting, or did things change?
A lot of the police deal with a lot of matters now. A lot of cautions are given, a lot of cautions before they come to court. There's certainly much less crime comes to court. Lots of courtrooms have been closed because they're not in use anymore. So, yes.
And the type changed.
Now, burglaries, drugs. That's why burglaries happened, to get the money for drugs.
Okay, question, and I don't know how you can answer this one. How did you decide what you believed? Evidence?
I don't know what the question is.
Okay. Who speaks? Does a child speak? Or do they always have representation that acts for them?
Oh, no, they always have representation. If they're completely not guilty, they will have a court lawyer who will represent them.
So they put the case to you?
Yes, but there's also a prosecuting lawyer as well for the police. There's a defence lawyer and a prosecuting lawyer. We have to hear the whole case. Might take all day or maybe 2 days.
So you are judge and jury?
Yes.
In a way.
Yes.
And so did you have to... Do the facts have to be overwhelming? Do you understand? What I'm trying to say, when you go as a juror, they tell you that the evidence has to be overwhelming for you to...
Yes, you have to be 100% sure.
Yeah, that's what I was trying to say.
If it's only 90%, then they have to have the benefit of the doubt.
And how often did the same child or youngster come up against you?
Oh, infrequently, not very often.
Really? They're not repeat?
Don't forget I'm sitting 2 days a month.
Oh,
there's another 15 days in the month, and it could be another court. Could be, you know, so it doesn't necessarily mean anything.
Fascinating. And when you went away for...
Can I just say, you're just asking about the defence and the prosecution.
Yep.
The public are not allowed in these courts, which is very unusual. Public are not allowed in juvenile courts, whereas they are allowed in adult courts. Not only allowed in other courts, they're encouraged. There's a special place to sit. But you can't have the public in juvenile courts. I'll tell you another interesting thing which you haven't asked.
Hold on, Dad.
Sorry.
That first one, has it always been the same for the 30 years you sat?
Have
an audience?
Even today, public are not allowed in juvenile courts.
Oh, right, okay.
And no reporting by newspapers. No.
Oh, right.
They can't have that.
Mm-hmm.
What I used to do quite a lot of was adoptions. Now, that was lovely. Really, really enjoyed used to do adoptions. The young person used to come in with a parent, with a foster parents, and the parents used to swear an oath that they'd look after the child and they were going to adopt it. And I always really enjoyed myself to say to the child, you've now got two birthdays. Today is a birthday and also the real day you were born. Oh. They were really, I don't think you do that today, but I really enjoyed doing adoptions.
I did see on YouTube, actually, in America, the court did that. And it was only a couple of days ago I saw that, I can imagine.
Lovely doing adoptions.
And to go the opposite way, what was your least favourite thing to come up against?
I think knives was the worst thing. Knuckle dusters. Yes, knives were the worst thing.
And what would the defense?
They used to say it's to protect ourselves, which is rubbish, because if you've got a knife, you're going to use it. I always used to say that to them.
Did you?
And I used to use proper words. If they were shoplifting, I would say to them, you're a thief. And everybody's using that word thief. They'd never heard that before. They were shoplifters. They weren't thieves. I didn't think they were thieves. They thought they were shoplifters.
Oh, that made it okay, did it?
And because I used to say to them, you are a thief. And that really shook the parents or the mother or the child.
And so I suppose in their mind, they thought, oh, the shop owner's earning enough money, they can afford to lose a bit or that's something right. like that. They substantiate right. it in their mind.
Yes. But I used to say the word thief. I don't know many, very few magistrates would use that word. Very few did. So the clerk of the court who was advising us used to come and look round at me when I used to say thief. But it's right. They were thieves.
Yeah. Did over those 30 years, did political correctness come into play? Did what you have to say, were you checked or?
No. The only thing, they did ask us, when we were learning how to do it, being taught, we weren't allowed to use homilies. We have to say the sentence and that was the end of it. But I used to add to it and things like that. If you come back in front of me, it'll be much worse next time, which you weren't supposed to say, but I was a bit cheeky, you know, used to say things like that, you know. I used to speak to the parents and tell them off. And you weren't supposed to do that. You were supposed to just announce a sentence and that was it.
And when you stopped, did it feel like something was missing? Or had you had enough by then?
Yes, no, not at all. I missed it very much. I was a bit upset that I got a paperweight after 30 years of doing this. You know, I didn't even get a letter from the Home Secretary say thank you very much for 30 years of voluntary work, which I would have liked. That's all.
Yeah.
I got an uninscribed paperweight.
That's funny. No, it's not funny, but I understand. And didn't you go to events because you were a magistrate? Didn't you get invited to Mansion House or events or something?
Yes, we were invited, but we had our own kind of club. We had all our magistrates joined together in the particular court, and then once a year or twice a year we used to have a nice dinner somewhere up in the West End. No, it was a very nice crowd we had.
And did any of the magistrates ever get caught doing anything criminal?
Oh yes.
Tell me.
Friend of mine, yes. He was making notes. Friend of mine, we were quite friendly. And he was making notes of the addresses of the young girls that used to come in front of us and then go round later on in the evening to talk to them.
No,
he was in a lot of trouble. Yes. Wow. And then we had another one who had a car that looked like a police car, and he had on the top of it a blue flashing light. And he used to stop people, check their details. And he was a magistrate. yeah. He got caught doing that. Oh, yes, not all honest like me.
Oh, good. And did you, what was the percentage of boys and girls that came up in front of you?
Oh, funny you should say that, but put it another way. One of the very first questions I was asked was, do more black boys, black children, than white children come in front of you? And I had to stop and think. I have no idea. Because when you're sitting there, you just see a child. You don't see whether they're black or white or anything or ethnic, nothing. You just see a child. So I couldn't answer that question.
I understand that because you brought me up to see a person as a person, not to see colour, creed, yeah. religion or anything. So I'm not surprised because that I would be exactly the same.
Didn't notice the colour at all. But coming back to your question about the sex, I expect boys. Must be more boys. Yeah.
And did you often look at the parent and say, well, I'm not surprised the child's here?
Yes.
Did it seem to follow a pattern?
Yes, it did. Yes, you could see. You know, sometimes children might be, I don't know, 15 or 16, might come on their own even.
Really?
Parents couldn't even bother. But, of course, once they come on their own, we can't deal with it. We have to have an adult with them. So quite often the social worker would stand next to them. You know.
And did you have children in care as well that come up in front of you?
Yes. Runaways. Run away from homes, care homes.
Oh, so they would come in because they've run away. That's their crime.
No, they've done something. No, not because.
Oh, run away and done something.
They've done something. Probably they had to steal to feed themselves.
Oh.
Yeah.
And when it's... they're so young and it's a drug crime. Were you able to, rather than punish, put them in?
They're not taking the drugs. They're not taking the drugs.
Oh, they're selling.
They're selling the drugs. or they're an intermediary. They've got somebody to give them drugs to take round to another address to sell. Because they know the punishment for a 15-year-old would be different to a punishment for a 25-year-old.
So let's say, for example, when you finished 20 years ago, a high percentage were drug crimes. What, if you go back, 50 years ago when you started, what was the high percentage of the crimes?
Oh, I think shoplifting and prostitution as well.
At 15, they were coming up against prostitution.
And there was nothing you could do. All you could do with a prostitute was to fine them. So they don't have any money, do they? So out they go on the streets, earn some more money.
Money to pay their fine.
Yes, you can't put them into prison. There was no way to put them into, no. No, we had a lot of prostitutes and shoplifting. Those are the two big things.
And then knives come into play as time went on.
Knives is much more modern. Knives are not more modern, much more today.
Did you ever have knives? Did you have guns as well?
No, I've never heard of them. I don't think I've ever come across a gun.
Oh, really? Oh, no. That's interesting.
I don't think I've ever come across a gun. No, knife is quite a modern phenomenon. Yeah.
Oh, interesting. Right. Well, thank you, Dad. That was very, very interesting.
Do you want the address to send my cheque to?
You wish, just like I wish.
Oh.
But it was good. It was. No, I didn't. I didn't.
You should just see me all right.
Yeah. That's what think. You're imagining things. Okay, thanks, Dad, for the information. That was fabulous.
Right, I've got to watch Coronation Street now.
All right, then. See you later. Bye.
Bye.
So, a shout out to my dad. Thank you so much for chatting. That was really interesting. But what it has done is given you an idea in the last 20 minutes of what I do when I research, asking questions. Even just that one 20-minute conversation gives me so much background and questions that I can include to create my characters. And it's interesting over time how things have changed as well, how there's so many more knives out there and drugs and more shoplifting. But what was really interesting, I thought, was how the parents dealt with it. How, you know, it couldn't be their child. They were defending their child. And I wondered to myself how many of the parents have been up in court for similar as well. That would be interesting maybe if I could find another magistrate who did the adult courts to kind of find the opposite side of the story. I did put a call out this week because there's some people that I would really like to interview. So if anybody knows a pathologist, police officers, detectives, private detectives, security, anything like that, it'll be really interesting because I've always got characters like that in my books. So it would be fascinating for me to be able to chat to them and ask lots of questions. As you can hear, I have to think on my feet, really, because you kind of don't want to waste the short time that you've got with whoever, and you want to find out as much as you can. It's funny, I had, I can't remember who I was talking to this week, saying, well, what do? You just talk to people, or do people just talk to you? I know, I was doing a podcast and somebody else's podcast, and I said, yeah, people just come up to me and tell me stories. And I think a little bit of it is because they want to end up in the book. There's a bit of that. I get a load of people saying to me, oh, you should write my story, or I've got a great story to tell. And I think, well, go on then, go and write it, you know. Mine is all fictitious. My characters are all fictitious. But it's stories like the questions I've asked today that help me create the characters and the story. I really like the comment about, well, it couldn't be my child. That's really interesting for me. I wonder if it changes as you get older, if or if a child becomes an adult and is always doing the crimes, and if the parents change as they get older. I need to find that out. I wouldn't mind, yeah, speaking to somebody from an adult court just to see what the difference is. Anyway, today we're a little bit shorter. I think I used all the questions I wanted to with Dad. One thing I forgot to tell you was I did try and get an interview with a 999 operator. He wanted to chat. He was really excited, but got stopped. They wouldn't let him do it. It's not allowed. He would have lost his job. So I wanted to hear some of the 999 calls. So if there's anyone out there that used to be on a 999 operator that would come and chat, that would be really good, or if you know anybody. But today I'm going to finish there. And I'd like to say thank you for listening to episode 9 of The Life of a Crime Novelist.